My name is John McCambridge. For those of you who don't know me, I'm the director of operations here. So usually when I get on stage, I give this riveting, energetic, everybody at the edge of their seats update on our current generosity initiative. And I talk about finances and tithing and all the things that everybody gets out of bed in the morning to come to church for. But today, I have the privilege of speaking about something else. And so if that disappoints you, I apologize. Please stick around. I think this is also important and might be impactful. You know, I think it's important when you're a part of a church community that the people who serve the community tell their stories. I think that you guys have a right, and I think it's important for you to know the people that serve you, like where they come from. Why do we do what we do? Why are we here? What is our faith built on? What did your journey look like? All that stuff is important. And so today I'm going to share a little bit about my story, a little bit about where I came from and how my faith journey started and what that means for me. So hopefully you get to know me a little bit better today. You know, one of the things that I think I bring to this church staff that's a little bit unique, a little bit different, is that I did not grow up in church. And that's rare on a church staff. It's rare because typically the way it works is you grow up in church, you're affected by the church, and therefore when you get older, you want to be a part of that thing and you want to go affect others. Those are usually the people who are on a church staff. But me personally, I grew up totally unchurched. We never really went to church. It wasn't a big part of our life. It wasn't really something we found important. And it doesn't mean we didn't believe in God. I remember praying with my mom every night. I know that both of my parents individually have relationships with Jesus, but it just wasn't something culturally that we really did. And so I went through my adolescence not really understanding much about the foundation of Jesus and what it means to follow him and what it means to be a Christian. And when I was seventh grade, my older sister, she was 2 years older than me, she was a freshman in high school, and she started going to this thing called Young Life. And Young Life is a Christian organization. It isn't a church, but it's a Christian organization. And they get students together to have fun, and then they teach a little bit about the gospel. It's a great organization. My sister started going to it, so I immediately ran to my mom, and I was like, well, Colleen joined the cult, so that's good. And my mom's like, what do you mean? I was like, yeah, she's over there right now. They're probably doing like animal sacrifices and mystic dances. And my mom's like, really? And I was like, probably. I mean, what do you think they're doing over there? And part of that was being the annoying younger brother, something I'm very good at. I talked to the high school students about this last couple weeks ago, and I told them that I think it's my spiritual gift. And so you have people who are gifted, you know, the Bible says there's like the gift of knowledge, the gift of prophecy, the gift of speaking in tongues, and mine is the gift of annoyingness, and I do it very well. My mom was here first service, and I could see her, and she was like, that's true. And I was like, just not in my eyesight, Mom, okay? I'm trying to speak here. And so part of it was that. Part of it was me being that and playing my role, but part of it is that I really was skeptical. You know, why did my sister want to go to this thing? Why did she want to go hear about a God that wasn't really important to our family? Why did she want to go be a part of this thing that was about a God that wasn't really a part of our life? And so I was skeptical. If you fast forward 2 years, I'm a freshman in high school, and I look like this, right? I'm 15 going on 8. I mean, look at that. I can't believe that. Jenna, my wife, was like, you are not 15. And I was like, oh, yes, I was. And so, like, I showed this again to the students last week, and I put it in here to be funny, to add a level of levity, and they laughed, like, too hard at it, and it hurt my feelings. I was like, yeah, I know, I look young, right? Okay, seriously. No, guys, seriously, stop. Okay. One more person laughs, high school night's over, because I'm fine. Puberty hasn't hit yet, and it wouldn't hit for another couple years, which is a different story for a different time, but at this time, I enter high school looking like this, not really knowing how this thing was going to go, truly. I mean, how was this really going to go? And an amazing thing happened. I played baseball, and a couple of the older guys, senior guys, the guys that you would consider cool and popular, started to, like, want to be my friend. And, like, in high school, that's like gold. You know, the jungles of high school, social status is currency. And so having these older, cooler guys want to be associated with me, when I look like this, I was about to be cool by proxy, which is almost as good as being cool in and of yourself. And so they wanted me to go to this thing called Young Life, which I talked to you about a second ago, and I was skeptical. I pushed back. I didn't want to go. Eventually, I went, and I found out that I really liked it. I really liked going to this thing. I liked this community. You know, I liked it because it was fun. I was like, 45 minutes, I get to go have fun with my friends. If I have to pay for that with 10 minutes of hearing about Jesus at the end, that's fine. I'll make that trade-off. It was fun. I got to be around these guys that I thought were cool, that I thought were going to make me cool. And then there was like the third thing, and I noticed this, and I wasn't expecting it, but I noticed this as soon as I walked in, and it really, really affected me. It was something that like grabbed me by the heart as soon as I walked in the doors. And for some reason, all the pretty girls went to Young Life. And so, like anybody who starts a relationship with Jesus, I started on the solid foundation of fun, social status, and pretty girls. And so I went on this mission, and off I went. What could go wrong? And so, you know, I was in this thing. I started to grow in my relationship with these guys. I had a small group leader. He was a senior. I was a freshman. I trusted him. And he would ask me, because he knew I was skeptical. He'd say, what do you think about this Jesus guy? And I would say, I don't know. Because I'm a teenager, and that's what you say when you don't want to answer a question. I don't know. Eventually, I got comfortable enough, and I told him. I was like, you know what? I'm going to lay it out on the table for you. I don't believe that stuff about Jesus. I don't believe it about him. I mean, what you're asking me to believe is difficult, right? That there was this guy who was also a god, and he was here on earth, and he was, like, tortured and murdered, and I guess that's a good thing for some reason, and then he was buried and dead, and then he rose from the dead, even though I know for a fact that dead people stay dead. I didn't believe it. I said, I don't believe that stuff about Jesus, but I'll tell you what. The stuff that Jesus teaches, I'm kind of into that. I kind of like that. It grabbed a hold of me. You know, you guys, if you haven't really ever read the Bible, if you don't know what you think about Jesus, if you open Matthew chapter 5 and you read the Sermon on the Mount, regardless of what you feel about him, it will like blow your mind. The way that he tells us to live, the way that he tells us to treat each other, what he says power is in this world versus what the world tells us power is, it'll flip your mind upside down. It'll shift your paradigm. And I told Alex, I said, man, I like that stuff so much. I want to follow him. I want to live my life the way that Jesus tells me to live my life. I just don't believe he's God. I mean, I'm not crazy. And I'll never forget this, you know, because basically what I was saying, I thought I had this airtight case, you know. I thought I had this logical conclusion where I was saying that Jesus is a great teacher, but he isn't God. And this isn't anything revolutionary, right? I mean, most critics, most skeptics, most people critical of the Christian faith, they don't actually have a problem with the things that Jesus teaches. I mean, he was like nice. He said to love each other. Like nobody was really like, no, that's bad. They just don't believe he's God. So this is a very common view. And I laid it out on the table like I had just completed some logic maze. And I'll never forget this because he looked at me and I'd never been challenged in my faith. Alex looked at me and he said, you know, that doesn't really make any sense. And I was like, excuse me? And he was like, well, that doesn't really make any sense. I mean, Jesus walked around this earth and he said he was God. And I was like, okay. And he said, well, if you don't believe he's God, but he said he was, then why would you want to follow anything else that he says? And I was like, oh. And it shook my foundation. I had never thought of it like that before. What he was telling me is that if he isn't who he says he is, why should you follow him? Why would you want to follow him if he isn't God, but he said he was? And so, you know, this really started me on my journey and implanted in me this importance of figuring out who Jesus was. You know, if there was somebody walking around outside right now that was claiming to be God, all of us would be like, somebody get this man out of here. I mean, he thinks he's God, he's crazy. And if he turned around and then told you how to live, how to love, how to have relationships, would you listen to the crazy man who thinks he's God? You wouldn't. Why would you? The only advice I'm giving today is to say, don't listen to a crazy man on the street that tells you that he's God when he tells you how to live. It makes no sense. You wouldn't do it. And so I started down this track of trying to figure out who Jesus said he was so that I could figure out if I believed him or not. And all of this would be a lot easier, a lot more comfortable if Jesus said that he was a good guy. And because I'm a good guy, you should follow me. Because that would give us room. That would be subjective. We could put that to the test. Is he a good guy? Let's measure it. It would give us some areas in the middle. Like, we don't like to have yes or no choices. We don't like binary decisions. We want there to be some gray, and we want to live in the gray. But Jesus didn't walk around saying that he was a good dude. Jesus claimed that he was God. And so now, because he claimed that, it puts us in this position where we have to really figure out if we believe that's true. It's too important. That's too big of a claim. C.S. Lewis, he's a brilliant thinker, author, theologian, he puts it this way. He says that because Jesus walked around this earth in public, documented, saying that he was God, he's one of three things and one of three things only, and we have to choose which one we believe. Jesus was a liar. He was a liar. He said he was God. He knew he wasn't. He's a liar. Or maybe worse than that, he's a lunatic, right? He actually believes he's God. That is what you call somebody who actually thinks they're God. You call him crazy. He's a lunatic. Jesus was not God, and therefore he was a liar or he was a lunatic. And the only other thing that you could possibly believe about him, the only other thing that we really have the choice, an option on the table for us to choose, is that he's the Lord. That he is who he said he is, that he came to do what he said he came to do, and he did it. Those are your choices. Because of what he claimed, we have to figure out which one of these things we believed. And so I started my faith journey in what I consider a very fortunate position of having this on my mind of something that was important. A lot of people grow up in the church. A lot of people grow up with someone saying, this is true because the Bible says so. Don't question. And I got to walk my faith journey from a total view of skepticism where I said, I think the foundation of my belief is who is Jesus, and I'm going to go figure out who I think he is. Because everything hinges on that. What Alex was telling me, my small group leader, was if he isn't who he says he is, there's no reason to follow him. And the flip side of that is that if Jesus is who he says he is, if he's not a lunatic, he's not a liar, if he's the Lord, then you should follow him, and then I will follow him. And so I went on this journey, and one of the most important things to figure out when you're trying to make this decision is, who did he claim to be? I mean, who did Jesus claim to be? Show me where he claimed that he was God, right? And so there's these four books at the beginning of the New Testament. We call them the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and these are eyewitness accounts of the life of Jesus. These are eyewitness accounts from people who were there, people who lived it. Don't ever forget that. You know, these men in these stories and that wrote these books were people who went out and then died because of what they believed. And they didn't believe it because they read it, and they didn't believe it because they heard it. They believed it because they saw it. And so never forget that. It's a great tool to figure out what Jesus said, right? So Matthew chapter 16, he has this really cool conversation with his disciples, his best friends, where he starts to dig into, like, who am I? Who do people think I am? And so in Matthew 16, chapter 13, or verse 13, it says, when Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, who do people say the Son of Man is? Who do people say I am? What are they saying out there about me? And his disciples got together and they came back to him and they said, well, some people say you're John the Baptist. Others say Elijah, and still others, Jeremiah, or one of the prophets. And you have to understand the level of this compliment, right? When they say that he's one of these three men, these are three of the greatest teachers in the history of Israel. Three figures, prophets, who are mouthpieces of God. People through whom God revealed himself to his people. These are three of the greatest teachers of all time to these people. And they are saying, you are on the same echelon as these men. And in fact, because of what these people believed about resurrection and souls, some people actually believe that you're one of them. People believe you're one of the greatest teachers of all time. That's what people think of you. And so Jesus says, all right, cool. That's pretty good. What about you? Who do you say I am? You guys know me. If anybody knows who I am, it's you. Well, you've lived with me for 3 years. Who do you say I am? And so there was this disciple. His name was Peter. He's probably the most famous one. He's one of Jesus' closest friends, and he's known throughout his time with Jesus for this character of boldness. He usually steps forward and does something crazy, and he usually gets in trouble for it. Jesus is usually like, Peter, that was too much. You need to go sit over there and be quiet. If you do that again, we might have to look for a 12th. And so Peter steps forward, and he says the craziest thing he's ever said. Peter steps forward, and he says, you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. The Messiah, this was not a figure, but this was the figure that the entire history of the nation of Israel pointed to. If you open up the first book of the Bible, Genesis chapter 3, this Messiah figure is mentioned, and this was going to be somebody who was going to come and save the world. It means the anointed one, the chosen one, the one to whom all of this points, God in the flesh. Peter looks at this guy that he's been living with and traveling with for 3 years. He looks at him and he says, I think it's you. I think you're him. You are the Messiah. You are the chosen one. You are God in the flesh. And because Peter has like zero subtlety, Jesus can't dance around this anymore. He can't be coy. When someone says that about you, you have to confirm it or you have to deny it. And so look what Jesus says. He says, blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for this was revealed to you not by flesh and blood, but by my Father in heaven. And what he's saying is like, not only is what you said true, not only is it correct, but it's so true and it's so correct that it might as well have come from the mouth of God himself. God himself might as well have just said what you said when you said I was the Messiah. So now it's on the table. Jesus is like, you're right, I'm God. In the flesh, I am the Messiah. I am here to save the world. That's who I am. And then this next sentence, in my opinion, is the most important sentence in the Bible. And that is a totally subjective statement. So if you disagree, please don't email. I have no reason to say that except I think it's really important. And I think it's important because it tells us why that matters. It tells us what it means for us. He says, and I tell you that you are Peter, which means rock in Greek, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it. And so Jesus is a preacher, right? He's good with words. He's poetic. And he creates this beautiful double meaning here. He says, I will call you Peter, which means rock in Greek, but on this rock I will build my church. This truth. When I asked you who I was and you said I was God in the flesh, you said I was the Messiah, on that rock, I will build my church. And so what he's saying here is that, you know, his following, because this is the first time the word church is used in all the Bible. And it's a Greek word, ekklesia. It means the gathering, the following. What Jesus is saying is that my following will happen on that truth of who I am. Not my personality, not my teachings, not my prophecies, and not my miracles. On the truth of who I am, my following will gather. And for me, this is so important in my life because when I was 15 years old and I didn't believe in God, an 18-year-old kid who was trying to share the gospel with me sat across a table from me and told me, what you believe about Jesus and who he is will determine whether or not you follow him. And if you open up this book 2,000 years ago, Jesus told his best friends, men who would go out and die for him, to spread his gospel the exact same thing. He said the exact same thing. What you believe about me, I'm saying that I'm God in the flesh, and whether you believe that or not, you will choose to follow me. What a profound truth. What an amazing thing to read about. And so this is really the foundation of our faith. You know, this is really what it means to be a Christian. People get real caught up in, like, culture, you know. How were you raised? Are you a Christian? Well, how was I raised? Yeah, I guess I am. Are you a Christian? Well, how do I behave? What is my moral code? What is my ethic? But when you answer the question whether or not you're a Christian, you are simply answering the question, what do you believe about Jesus? Do you believe him? In that conversation that he just had with his disciples, do you believe he is who he says he is? Do you believe he is who he says he is? And so when I was 15 years old, I started going down this journey to figure out what I believed about Jesus. Is he who he says he is? It took me 5 years to really come to a decision. It took me 5 years, but I wrestled with this. I had to choose. The disciples were told the same things, and they had to choose. And all of us in this room are told the same thing, and we have to choose, what do we believe about that? Are we going to follow him? Because do we believe he is who he says he is? And the implications of this are really, really far-reaching. The implications of what you answer this question determine how you think you should live your life. You know, if the answer is no, if you believe he's a liar or you believe he's a lunatic, then all of it is very, very meaningless. All of this is very meaningless. I mean, you can follow him if you want to because you think it's instructive or because you think it's it will help you here on this earth, I guess, but there's no truth behind it. There's no truth behind it. There's no objectivity grounding it. It's all very meaningless. But if you believe that he is who he says he is, if you believe he's the Messiah, if you believe he's the Lord, then it will shape and direct the way that you live your life for the rest of your life. It's the most important thing in the world. If he is who he says he is, that truth is the most important thing in the world, and therefore, we should follow him. If he is who he says he is, then we should follow him. And so for those of us who are in this room who don't know what they think about this answer, that's okay. I'm not actually standing here asking you to believe the same thing that I believe. I'm not. I'm simply asking you to wrestle with this truth, because coming to a conclusion on this is one of the most important conclusions, the most important conclusion that you will come to in your life. You should wrestle with this. If you have doubt, you should wrestle with that doubt and figure out what you believe. And for those of you in the room who believe that he is who he says he is, and you consider yourself Christ followers, I'm going to switch gears a little bit, and I'm going to show you from my journey what I think that looks like, what I aspire to live like because I believe Jesus is who he says he is, and I say I want to follow him. You know, one of the things that, I don't want to say that we cover it up, one of the things that sometimes we're not outward about enough is that being a Christian, being a Christ follower is very, very demanding. It's very demanding. It's probably the most demanding, self-sacrificing worldview that there is. Very demanding. And one of the reasons it's demanding, you know, what does it mean to be a Christian? What does the word Christian mean? It means a little Christ. Little Christ. We are called to be little Christ in this world, in this brokenness, right here, right now. Right? 5:14, church, Matthew 5:14, you are the light of the world. We are called to be lights. We are called to be like him, to emulate him. And that is demanding. That is demanding. And so to me, to follow Jesus is going to look a certain way. And you're not going to get there right now. This is a process that will refine you over the course of your life, and when you die, you will probably be miles and miles away from being like Christ. But this is what we strive for, to follow Jesus, right? To follow Jesus is to love others. To follow Jesus is to love others. That's the first thing. You know, they asked Jesus one time, they said, what's the most important commandment? And he said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind. And love others as yourself. So he said it, to love others. Now this is sacrificial and this is hard. You know, I had the privilege in my life of having a dad who actually lived this way. I mean, really, who actually lived a life of sacrificial love. How lucky is that? Most people might go through their whole lives never really knowing anybody who lives like this. And my father, the man that I'm biologically inclined to try to be like, lived this kind of life. I mean, it's amazing. My dad's a physical therapist. He drives around the city. He does home health. For as long as I can remember, he drives around the city for 12 hours a day. And his company only deals with people who come through Medicaid and Medicare. So it's the poor and it's the elderly, usually both. And he drives around the city in his vocation, in his job, and he serves these people. He serves them. He tries to make their lives better. He builds relationships with them. That's his job. But outside of his job, you know, my dad has relationships like this. And it is incredible to watch. He met an old man about 2 or 3 years ago, an old Catholic priest who's a priest at a local parish. And, you know, my dad started to build a friendship with him, like a real friendship. And he's not his patient. He's not part of our family. He isn't related to us in any way. just some man that my dad knew and became friends with. And so outside of his job, 12 hours a day, driving, doing home health, two or three times a week, he drives across the city just to be with this old man who's in the twilight of his life, just to be with him, just to help him, just to buy him groceries, just to help with things around the house. I mean, that looks weird. I mean, even me and my siblings were like, maybe do like once a month, Dad, and you're not trying to win a medal or anything. Like, calm down. He doesn't care. He does it two or three times a week for 2 years. And how do you do that? Like, how do you come to that conclusion that somebody's worth that much to give up your time, to give up your energy and your resources to help them? You know, one of the profound truths of believing that Jesus is who he says he is that that means you believe that God became flesh because he wanted a relationship with us and he died on a cross to have one. And what that means is that you now view other people very differently. You now view other people in a way that's very opposite to how the world views people. People are no longer valuable to you because of what they provide you. They're no longer valuable to you because of their usefulness to you. They're no longer valuable to you because of the stake that they claim in this world. Every single person that you meet, everyone that you've ever known, is inherently, intrinsically, indescribably valuable because they were created in the image of a God who loved them so much that he became flesh and blood and died on a cross just to have a relationship with them. Now, that is profound. That means something, and we need to move our lives in the direction of living like that, of viewing people like that and loving them accordingly. To follow Jesus because of that truth is to love others. To follow Jesus is to fight for others. You know, I said that being a Christian was to emulate Jesus. Well, Jesus came to earth on a mission. Jesus came to earth on a mission. You know, we have this picture in our minds of this tender Jesus who's white for some reason and very ripped. Right? Who knows why? And he was kind and he, like, you know, told these beautiful truths, and it's all true, but, you know, he came here to fight. I mean, he came here to die for people to save the world, and he did it. He rode on a donkey into Jerusalem knowing that he was going to die on a cross after being tortured. Jesus was like a fighter. And we have to live our lives like this. We have to view ourselves as little Christ, and we have to live our lives with this urgency that we are in a fight, a battle for hearts and for souls and to let people know how loved they are. There's this activist and speaker. She owns an organization. Her name is Johnny Erickson Tada. You might know who she is. She was in a horrible accident when she was younger. She became a quadriplegic. And she spent her entire life dedicated to bringing the gospel to the disabled community, a community that's often forgotten about in all parts of life, including the faith world. And she spent her life fighting and clawing to bring the gospel to this community. And one time she was at a conference and someone asked her, they said, you know, how do you do this? I mean, how do you keep going with your physical, you know, maladies, with the issues that you have physically? How do you keep doing this? And she said, I believe this is the only time in history that I actually get to fight for God. Right here, right now. This is the only time in history that I actually get to be in the fight, because when I die, I believe I will be in God's glory and it will be a celebration, but I will no longer have the privilege of actually fighting the battle. And so I'm going to fight the good fight for everything I'm worth. And that's inspirational to me. You know, as Christians, we believe our life is eternal. We're eternal beings. Our timeline is infinity. And this life is just a speck on the timeline of infinity, but that speck really, really matters. It really matters because that speck is the only time that we're actually engaged in the fight, and we should treat our life with a purpose and a sense of urgency that is true, that we're here to fight. We're here to fight for God. To follow Jesus is to love others. To follow Jesus is to fight for others. And the last thing I have is to follow Jesus is to know you are loved. And the reason that I put this one in here is because the only possible way that you could ever live these first two truths is if you actually believe the same thing is true about you. if you actually believe that you are that loved by God, if you actually believe that the God of the universe who created everything, who's all powerful, refused to not have a relationship with you. He loved you so much that he became flesh and blood in Jesus. He died on a cross to bridge the gap between an imperfect you and a perfect God. And that changes everything. You know, what that means is that all of your trauma, all of your loneliness, all of your pain, all those things are real, but they're nothing more than symptoms of a brokenness that really no longer enslaves you, a brokenness that you are no longer enslaved by. They're just symptoms, and they're real, and they hurt, but they're just symptoms. They do not define you anymore. They do not define me anymore. I am loved, and I am valued by a God, and it's a beautiful love. And we get to live it in this beautiful life, and we have a beautiful God, and we really have to believe that. You know, as I went on this journey, you know, what happened, and I risk being so cliche that I, you know, get booed off the stage, but, you know, you look for God, and I was very calculated about it. You know, if I could just prove that Jesus exists, if I could just prove he was real, historicity, if I could just prove it, and I could prove that he's God, then everything else will be okay. And what happens is you go on this journey, and as you start to believe that Jesus is who he says he is, these effects start to come into your life, and it starts to change you. And for me, the thing that changed me first, and the first transformation I started to feel, was that I started to believe that I was really this loved, that I was really this valuable. So as I went on the next part of my journey, I'm trying to this day to figure out how to live these first two. You know, this is not a thing where I'm congratulating myself on getting to the mountaintop. I fall down. I fail at this way more often than I succeed. But I believe that Jesus is who he says he is. I do. I believe he is who he says he is, and so I want to follow him. And so I wake up every single morning, and I try to position myself the best way that I can so that I can follow him, so that I can go where he wants me to go, so that I can love the way that he wants me to love, so that I can have relationships the way that he wants me to have relationships. And so my heart in this is two things. The first is I want this church and this community to wrestle with what they think about the person of Jesus. Have you ever really thought about it before? Do you believe he is who he says he is? Because it's too important of a question to not wrestle with. I want us to wrestle with this. And if you say yes and you believe, then our next step is to start to move the ship in the direction of the way that Jesus wants us to live, to follow him, to be lights in this world. And I have this crazy conviction about this community, about this church. And some people think I'm crazy when I talk to them about this. But I really believe that this community can be a building block that starts to change the world. I really do. That if we really believe this, if we really internalize that Jesus is who he says he is, and that's how much we're loved, that we can truly start to be a community of people who are agents of change, who go out into the world and change people's lives through the way that we love and the way that we fight. And so my hope in this is that this summer, if you have a second to catch your breath, if you have a second to relax and reflect, that you reflect on these two things. Who is Jesus? Who is he to me? And then depending on how you answer that question, what does that mean for my life? I'm going to pray. I'm going to close this in prayer, and I'm going to bring the band back out, and they have a song. And this is one of the last times maybe that you'll ever get to hear Amanda Burnish sing. And I would personally pay money for that. So I know people like to leave during the last song, but maybe just stick around for a second. I'm going to close this in prayer. If you want to pray these words with me, if you feel like you want to take this step to start to follow Jesus, I don't want you to stand up. I don't want you to raise your hand. I don't want you to come to the front. I want you to quietly pray these words and repeat after me. Lord, I believe that you are who you say you are. I believe that you came to do what you said you came to do, and I believe that you did it. I believe that I personally am broken, and nothing that I can ever do will be good enough to earn my way into a relationship with you. And so you became flesh and blood in the name of Jesus Christ. And you died on a cross so that an imperfect me can have a relationship with a perfect you. And Lord, I just pray today that I believe those words, I believe that truth, and I want to start to live my life that way, and I want to start to follow you. Lord, I pray for this community. I pray that we can become the people in this world, the lights in this world, the little Christs, and start to emulate you and start to make a difference and start to go out there and change the world, Lord. In your name we pray, amen.